In patients with vague symptoms of headache and fatigue, don't forget to think carbon monoxide. Hello and welcome to this week's Urgent Bite, brought to you by the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose, and today we look at a recent article in BPAC New Zealand about carbon monoxide poisoning. It is linked in the show notes, and it is definitely worth a read. Carbon monoxide is a colourless, odourless, and tasteless gas, and it is formed by the incomplete combustion of carbon-containing fuels. So in everyday life, accidental exposure will happen usually in one of two ways. Firstly, the use of fossil fuel burning pieces of equipment in a poorly ventilated area will lead to a build-up of carbon monoxide. This might be someone using a chainsaw in a small shed, for example, or an unvented camping cooker in a small tent, or the running of a motor vehicle in the garage with the doors closed. Secondly, fossil fuel burners that are within a property are designed in such a way as to properly vent gases away from the house via the flue. Gas cookers and water boilers, for example, need regular servicing and certification to ensure this system is working correctly. So faulty or poorly maintained equipment can result in carbon monoxide levels rising within the building. And you may also get exposure to carbon monoxide around open bonfires and wood burners, and it is one of the many harmful constituents of inhaling cigarette smoke. According to the Center for Disease Control in America, carbon monoxide is responsible for 400 deaths a year in the United States. And that's not those that are linked to open fires and house fires and the like, and it accounts for 20,000 ED visits and 4,000 admissions each year. BPAC quote figures for New Zealand at 397 deaths between 2006 and 2014, and they say that 96% of these were intentional poisonings. Carbon monoxide binds to hemoglobin to form carboxyhemoglobin with an affinity 200 times greater than that which oxygen binds to hemoglobin. This competition leads to decreased oxygen capacity in the blood and then hypoxia of tissues and ultimately death. Pulse oximetry, however, will not discriminate carboxyhemoglobin and registers it as hemoglobin bound to oxygen. So a person suffering from carbon monoxide poisoning will have normal saturations, and their tissues remain rosy and red too, so they don't look hypoxic either. And there are other mechanisms by which symptoms can occur, which you can read about in the BPAC article and the references that they give. The symptoms a patient will exhibit will depend on the length of exposure, but they include headaches, lethargy, nausea, abdominal and chest pains, and shortness of breath during the acute phase. People who experience chronic exposure will report memory difficulties, mood change, ataxia, coordination issues, tremors, and slow movement. Once a diagnosis is established, treatment in mild cases is removing the patient from the source of carbon monoxide and then fixing the thing that's causing it. In moderate to severe cases, the treatment is 100% oxygen. BPAC state the half-life of carbon monoxide to be 5 hours, reducing to 90 minutes in the presence of 100% oxygen at sea level and 20 minutes in a hyperbaric chamber. So the BPAC article is worth a read for urgent care physicians because it is worth having carbon monoxide poisoning in our list of differentials when patients present with non-specific symptoms like fatigue and headaches. And like with so much in medicine, history is the key. So inquiring about activities and fossil fuel burning devices, etc., is important. BPAC recommend using the COMA acronym for history taking. So that is C for cohabitants. Are other people in the house affected similarly? Obviously, if everybody in the house has the same symptoms, then you've got to be thinking carbon monoxide. O stands for outside and away. Do people get better when they leave the house or leave work, and then symptoms return when they go back to a specific place? M for maintenance. Do they get their gas appliances serviced regularly by certified technicians? And A stands for alarm. Do they have a carbon monoxide monitor or alarm? And have they checked it regularly that the batteries are working? You can get these in most hardware stores, and the battery-powered ones, much like a smoke detector, need to be maintained. It's not a case of simply having one. It's got to be a working one. And some people have the detectors that change colour in the presence of carbon monoxide, but unless you look at it, you're not going to know. So in terms of testing, blood levels for carboxyhemoglobin are possible, and you'll need to check with your lab if they're available in your area. But from my experience, EDs test for carboxyhemoglobin on their blood gas analyzer. In New Zealand, it is worth remembering that carbon monoxide poisoning is a notifiable condition. The Best Practice portal can do this for you, and there is an explanation of how to do that in the article. But if you don't have that, then you'd simply call Public Health directly, and it does not need to be a confirmed case, and you should report it on suspicion of carbon monoxide poisoning. If you are discharging a patient from your care to home, you should insist they follow up with their GP to monitor for delayed symptoms. And obviously those of you outside New Zealand should follow local policy. So have a read of the BPAC article, which is linked in the show notes, and keep it in the back of your mind next time you have a patient with non-specific symptoms of headache, lethargy, memory lapses, and so forth. By considering the diagnosis and asking the right questions, we will hopefully pick up on those early cases of accidental exposure. Now, if you have any comments, questions, corrections, or suggestions, email podcast@rnzcuc.org.nz. We'll be back next week with another podcast. I look forward to seeing you all then. But for now, thanks for listening.